This is DJ Steve Wonder from Los Angeles. You're listening to Rebel Radio. Aight? Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I talk to the Rebels who are shaping youth culture. We find out how they do it, why they do it, and what you can do to get a little piece of the pie for yourself. We're also the only show that features new music every week from our friends over at EDM.com. I'm your host, Josh Levine, and my guest today is my man, Steve Wonder. He's a great DJ, producer, remixer. He's the host of the Selected Eclectic podcast, along with DJ Spider and Mr. Best. And he and Mr. Best also produced one of my favorite mixtapes I've heard in recent years. It's on Mixcloud. If you look up the New Wave mixtape from Steve Wonder and Mr. Best, it's a great listen. Before I get into it, I want to tell you we're putting up more and more video on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/rebelradionet, and also on my Instagram. I'm just using my personal Instagram for now. You can follow me at Jay Levine. We're starting to put clips from our interviews up there, so you might find some of that. And we're going to get into the interview with Steve Wonder right after our EDM.com track of the week.
So it blows like Christmas. Yeah, they might not miss this, but I'm gonna guarantee that they're gonna kiss this ass. Make them my boss, but broke cause flippers get left in the cross. They be failing while I take a pass. Straight to the top, I make that my task. Always stay first and never be lost. But what you then? Yeah, they can call me the mask. And if they come fast, tell them I'm not internet rocks. I send them back to the box. Far where Farmer got shizzle on blocks. So they send me the hate mail, see my name on the front on the label. So they send me the hate mail, see my name on the front on the label.
And that was Ellis Delta and D Lush with Hate Mail, the EDM.com track of the week. Get over to EDM.com and check out new music. And of course, let's get into the interview with Steve Wonder.
Flames at my table.
Thanks for coming to do this, man. Excited to talk to you. I've been seeing your name around forever.
Oh, totally.
So yeah. I want to talk about you, though. I want to talk about how you got started in all this.
Okay.
Do you remember first getting into music when you were a kid?
Yeah. My earliest memories was probably like Herbie Hancock performing at the Grammys, the Rocket thing.
Oh, yeah.
I think anyone who saw that as a kid was just, especially for DJing and the scratching. And,
right.
You know.
Were you into hip hop and that before then?
I mean, I was so young. I don't know if that was 84. I may have been 5 years old. You know.
Yeah, it was.
Luckily,
around.
I had an older brother, 3 years older.
Uh-huh.
He put me on to hip hop.
Okay.
He taught me about break beats. You know, he's the one who kind of opened Pandora's box of it being more than just which the song you're listening to, like the samples and
right.
graffiti and
right,
just
right,
like
right.
it being a whole culture
yeah.
behind it, which
yeah.
once that is opened, it never ends. You
yeah.
know, I'm still searching for samples and stuff. You know what I mean?
Of course,
so
yeah.
like, luckily I had that influence. So when he was 10, I was 7, you know, he was feeding me like, oh yeah, but that song is from this song.
Oh,
you know
cool.
what I mean? And then
yeah.
it kind of like.
I mean, even for 10, that's good.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I mean, I always wish I was born a little earlier. I was born in 79.
Okay.
I like to say I was born in the 70s.
Right.
But, you know, I still like being 9 years old in 88 when it was like Run DMC,
yeah.
Guns N' Roses, like that's like kind of the height of MTV,
yeah,
like
for sure.
Creativity and just kind of like so many things were happening at that point. I like so many different types of music that actually were quality and had staying power. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? I mean, of course there was hair bands and all that.
But, yeah, of course.
But I'm glad, you know, even saying I wish I was born young in an earlier age, I'm still happy that I got to experience all that because it did have a big influence on me, you know,
yeah,
like watching MTV Raps and,
sure,
you know what I mean? So, but yeah, I mean, that performance with Herbie Hancock, I mean, it was hip hop. He had a DJ.
Right.
It was like break dance. It was like everything that was kind of the sound of New York at that time, which I'm still obsessed with, like New York circa like 80 to 85, you know,
sure,
what I mean? When all the cultures were kind of combining.
I mean, it's funny you say that because, you know, we're just talking about music on TV and it's like that moment, like for a lot of America, that was like their introduction to hip hop.
Yeah.
Right.
And, yeah.
And Herbie, you know, I read his autobiography and he talks about, you know, he kind of talks about inventing hip hop like from his perspective, right,
yeah,
on that night.
Yeah.
And how that show came together and
well,
all
that performance too with all the mannequins and
yeah,
the robots, it was so abstract, you know, like I think a lot of DJs and hip hop heads who are older than me always say Sugar Hill Gang Rapper's Delight is like the first record they bought or that's the
sure
moment, you know.
Yeah.
But that was 79, so that's when I was born.
Right.
You know, so my moment kind of was that, was the Herbie Hancock,
uh-huh,
and just kind of like the eclecticness. It was very like Basquiat. It was very underground New York, like what he captured. You know,
mm-hmm,
what I mean? It wasn't
mm-hmm
like commercialized.
Definitely.
Or like, you know what I mean? So that connected even more. You
even
know?
The idea that song was a hit, right? If you listen to it by today's standards or by
yeah
the standards back then, right? There's hardly any words. I mean, there's no words, basically.
Yeah. Just the fresh or
yeah,
the
awesome. Yeah, yeah, it's just some scratches,
yeah,
right? And
yeah,
there's, and like the fact that a record like that could be a hit.
Yeah. It always reminded me of the Beverly Hills Cop theme song because the Saints
yeah, yeah
are the lead.
Yeah.
But it was just so funky and so like, it had that Kraftwerk electro,
sure,
but it wasn't like super fast. It was like
right,
right there. It was just like, it was dope. So yeah, that was a huge influence on me and music and just like hip hop culture. Hip hop.
So, you know, were you like hip hop head from day one, pretty much then?
Yeah. I mean, I always, like I said, Guns N' Roses. Like I always like rocked.
Mm-hmm.
I was just a fan of music.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like I said, when my brother kind of helped me see the depths of the music. And I mean, there's depths in any genre you're
yeah
going into. It always, you can dig deeper. But yeah, that's when I was like, all right, I want to know more. And yeah, I mean, Fat Boys, just
uh-huh
so much influential as a kid, you know, just like, it was like, I always like to say how hip hop in the 80s kind of correlated to wrestling. Like the big,
is that right?
The big personalities, you
okay
know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like the Fat Boys were such a outlandish kind of
right
like marketed, created group. And it's just like, I don't know, like just a Hulk Hogan.
The Fat
like,
Boys had a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Disorderlies?
Yeah, I saw Disorderlies.
Like,
I remember seeing Disorderlies.
And that's like a crazy thing, right?
That, yeah.
Like, I mean, because now you look back at them, they're kind of gone, right? And from history.
Yeah.
Like, except for us. Most people.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Most people never heard of Fat. Most hip-hop fans.
Yeah.
Never heard of Fat Boys, right?
Yeah.
But they got their own movie.
No, I mean, like, their impact on the culture was huge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah.
From, I think they won a competition to be in the Fresh Fest or something. I might have my history wrong.
I went to that Fresh Fest.
That's
crazy. I went to year two, I think,
84,
85.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and just kind of them, I think they came out of the Fever, but just kind of how
uh-huh
their evolution of like what they, from like, what they were the Fresh 3MCs or something. And,
yeah.
But just like that was the early days of marketing, you know,
mm-hmm
with Run DMCs and my Adidas, like, I went to the Adidas party on Saturday, the whole, like, you know, and it's just like they were so ahead of the game. I mean, we're talking 33 years ago to have Adidas sponsor, and none of that was heard of. And it was just so, when I read about it, and that's what's crazy too, is that that marketing people and branding, like, just people that were open, because rap had a stigma back then, you know,
for
like
sure.
Them playing rap videos on MTV, so like, it's crazy, you know, whoever was doing the marketing, Swatch Watch was the fest, you know, like those people that were willing to take a chance on the music really were ahead of their time. As you see now, it's everything, like.
Man, I was talking with somebody about that the other day, that like Swatch, they blew it.
Yeah.
Like, because when I was 14, like that, every kid wanted a Swatch.
Yeah.
You know, and part of it was the music stuff, and part of it was just like they were making this watches unlike anything else on the market,
yeah,
with the see-through and all the colors,
yeah,
and the wristbands you could swap out, yeah, and all that. And like, where'd they go?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Just, I don't know.
But they, but somebody had the idea at the beginning,
yeah,
and they were like, they were on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, that's interesting.
I always like to think about the, how, you know, it's like, you look at like Paid in Full, and like Big Daddy Kane, like, and all the big Dookie ropes and mm-hmm. the Dapper Dan Gucci, and mm-hmm. like the difference of what, like, what kind of like being, I don't want to say materialistic, but like showing off like that you were paid in that era, as opposed to kind of like when it shifted, when Biggie and Puffy and like the shiny suit era, you know what I mean? Because it's kind of the equivalent. But I think people didn't like criticize it so much because there was so much lyricism, and, you know, like, I don't know, you know what I mean? It's always interesting to me. It's like,
well, it's funny. So I just had Tommy from Hip Hop DX on the show,
mm-hmm.
and he's kind of arguing that the reason hip hop is so big today, and it's the dominant force in, mm-hmm. in music and culture, is because it's synonymous with the American dream, with that paper chase,
mm-hmm.
right? And that, like, whereas rock, other genres have always kind of been like, you know, they've always kind of been like, we're not really about the money, we're about the art.
Yeah.
And hip hop's like, we're about the money.
Yeah.
And
the art is,
and
about,
he feels
the money.
Like America's about the money.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think you bring up a good point, which is like that relationship keeps changing.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, Rakim, you know, he was flossing.
Yeah.
But we don't think of him as a, like, the people that love Rakim,
yeah,
will criticize Migos,
yeah,
for being all about the money.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Uzi Vert and all them dudes,
yeah,
that just rap about how rich they are, like,
yeah. I guess, but Rakim was like Paid in Full, like, it was just such a artistic expression of the hustle to get the money.
Sure.
That it was different than bragging about it. But yeah, it's similar. I've always thought about, like, if people in that era were like, oh, look at him with the gold chains, you know, or if they were just like, oh, that's the shit, you know, I wanna.
But like Slick Rick, we weren't mad at Slick Rick.
Yeah,
we're talking about how fly he was.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You know, that's what people, you know, fresh tracks like $1 million. Like, that's what people quote from Slick Rick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I love it when new rappers quote 80s rappers, you know, like.
Yeah.
Anytime Nicki Minaj will reference like a Rakim line or something, I'm just like, yes. Like, it's just like, all right, like, keep the lineage, because
sure,
some of them might hear that line and then hear the song
that
it's from and be like, oh, I like that song. And that's kind of just like, that keeps the cycle going. I think when artists, new rappers, just like pay no homage, it's like that's when the culture kind of gets lost. And it's like, you know, it's just like pay it forward. You know, these people did it before you. It's just like listening to LeBron talk about, you know, his little thing with Laura Ingraham and, you know, like how ball players can't be make social commentary, and he's talking about Bill Russell and Jackie Robinson. It's like, yo, like, if, thank God for LeBron, and he's the mouthpiece, because he's saying everything he says is right. And
for sure,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if anything, the oppressors want people to be silenced or just not just talk about money and irrelevant stuff, you know, and it's like now more than ever people need to be saying that. So it's really, you know what I mean?
Well, people just want you to shut up when they don't like what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's never, like I saw something today about, you know, Mike Pence refused to stand at the,
oh, the Olympics. Yeah.
And someone, and whoever wrote, like, I thought sports was not where you're supposed to, like, where your politics, right? About, yeah, exactly, right?
So football game,
it only depends on what side you're on, right? Everyone's principles go out
the
window. I mean,
petty acts, everyone can see that they're petty. You know what I mean?
For sure.
If you move like that, everyone, it's super obvious. You know,
for sure.
If something is, I don't know, it's such a different thing when something's calculated and thought out and
definitely
done well. But if you're petty, you're petty.
Right.
No getting around it. Yeah.
Wait, how'd you get started DJing?
I got started DJing in high school. I had my best friend who is a producer. He went and got turntables. I went with him actually. Went to a pawn shop.
Uh-huh.
Copped the Techniques 12s for like $250
nice.
Used, you know what I mean? And for about 2 years, I just kind of like was always hanging out with him and he was learning how to DJ. I would go to the record stores, you know, like spots that don't exist anymore, Street Sounds,
uh-huh.
like DMC on Fairfax,
uh-huh.
like, and would go and just like hang, like pick up a record, like, oh, that's cool, but put it away, you know, like
right.
his dad would drop us off for an hour, we'd go through some records.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a few years into it, I was just like, I would start messing around in his turntables, like,
uh-huh.
this is fun, you know what I mean? And then just kind of like, I think maybe like 96, I decided I was gonna get my own setup and just started shopping for myself. And you know, that's kind of when it started. And,
yeah.
But my introduction was through. And there were some other DJs at my high school.
Okay.
This guy, he went by DJ Chaos. Now he's Double K. He's from that group People Under the Stairs.
Okay, yeah.
He was a DJ. A few other guys. There was a good hip hop scene. Like Merce went to my high school.
Nice.
A bunch of the Living Legend guys.
Uh-huh.
So there was always music kind of around at school, and we'd leave school and go to tapes. There was this record store, Martin's,
mm-hmm.
that was on Pico. That was real dope because they would get so many promo records.
Yeah.
And we would go shop there.
I remember bringing promos over there.
Yep. And it would be cheap.
Yeah.
You know, it would be like, you know, at one store it'd be $7.99,
uh-huh.
but he'd have them for $5, and that made a huge difference back then, like
for sure.
trying to get the promos or the white labels. And it's kind of how it started in high school. And then in college, you know, got a better DJ setup and
mm-hmm.
connected with some friends up there and just kind of went from a bedroom DJ to a house party DJ. To a bar DJ,
yeah.
To a club DJ.
Do you remember your first paid gig?
First paid gig.
I guess not.
I don't think so. I mean,
okay.
I can remember my early gigs. Like I used to DJ at this Indian restaurant on Sunset in Silver Lake, and used to lug.
Oh, electric.
It was called Tantra, I think. Actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's kind of like it's right by the junction.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. And it had a second floor. Yeah.
Had
a second floor.
Yep.
And I would lug my records up the stairs, and I have to take one crate mm-hmm. upstairs, walk down the stairs, take the next crate up. And that was one of the first, like, I was, through the 90s, I was real underground.
Yeah.
Spider will even attest to it. I was real anti.
Like backpack.
I was real backpack, but I was real anti-commercial jiggy.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
That record, Be Faithful, which is like a club standard. Which is, I play all the time now, but back then, like, I wouldn't buy the record.
Right.
Because it was just too, like, bottle popping.
Yeah.
But that's what the scene was like. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
I mean, in New York, you know, that's what was happening. I was real Freestyle Fellowship,
mm-hmm.
Far Side, real mm-hmm. underground LA, and stubborn, you know, and I missed a lot of music.
I mean, I feel like that was I think that happened everywhere, but I think especially in LA because, like, the scene got really big here off of gangster rap.
Yeah.
That, like, the underground was way more underground.
Yeah. Well, it felt cool to be part of something that was, or to be a fan of something that was so like grassroots.
Yeah.
And kind of, you felt like it was your own, you know, only like a certain amount of people knew about it. Like even today when I mention it and other people are like, oh, you know, you still feel like, oh, you knew about that. Like, so I think that's what kind of held me. But also I was really ignorant and stubborn into being open to other music, you know.
Like, that's youth, I think.
I didn't get into house music till the 2000s. You know, like, this people are digging this stuff. You got to play it. You know what I mean? Like,
Was there a house record that, like, opened your eyes?
The Daft Punk stuff started coming out, and I was like, yo, this is funky. I mean, a lot of that French house was just different to me.
For sure.
But I wasn't a club kid, per se. You know, I didn't start going out to clubs till I was actually 21, you know, like.
Okay.
And I think house was much more of a New York thing. Like, there was a scene out here. I know there was, like, Deep and, like, those spots, but I never really went to them. I was still, like, hip-hop, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because hip-hop, like, had that, you know, on the one hand, there's the sampling, which enabled them to, like, incorporate any sounds, right? But on the other hand, and I, you know, I was part of that, of, like, saying no to all this other shit, right?
Yeah.
That's too commercial.
Yeah.
That's too techno. That's too, you know, gangster, whatever, whatever your thing was. It was definitely about keeping people out.
Yeah. Well, it's tough. I mean, that's always been the catch 22 about being a DJ or an open format DJ, or just, you know, like, sticking to your guns and just playing what you hold so dear, as opposed to playing for everyone, you know. Like, it's tough because you can pigeonhole yourself, or people will pigeonhole you as this type of DJ, like, he does that, you know.
Yeah.
But I wish I would have known my younger DJ self that I should be open to playing everything, because I'll do weddings, I'll do all types of stuff, and have to, you know, work with the client and see what their playlist is, and, you know, just it's good to be versatile and flexible in terms of playing all genres. And I just, if I had known that, you know, that's one thing I'd say to a young DJ. Like, I mean, it's either, like, love one kind of thing, like, go hard on that, whatever it is, you know. If it's boom bap, if it's soul, if it's house, you know, that's what you are. Or be well versed in a little of everything, because you want to be a chameleon and kind of adapt to all different kind of parties. And if you're going to travel, and if you're going to go to Miami, you might play more Latin stuff. If you're going to go New York, you know, so you never know. So
Was that something you learned the hard way? Was there, like, a moment where that?
Yeah, I mean, I got booked through this guy, Rocktacon, one of my first gigs in New York, and it was, like, a New York spot. And I was just, it's probably 06 maybe, and I was just, I just got on Serato, and I was real, just like, I want to do gigs, you know? Uh-huh. And he booked me at the spot, and he was like, oh, by the way, it's, like, all house. And I didn't know, I mean, I had, like, a handful of house records.
Right.
You know, like, I was not deep at all. But it did force me to, like, get hip to the music quick and, you know, go on iTunes and find house playlists. Like, I like that song, I like that song. And somehow I managed to do the whole night, you know. It was one of those New York, like, 5-hour to 4 a.m. joints. And I made it through, you know what I mean? Like, for what it's worth, I didn't get kicked off. So, but, yeah, I mean, there's definitely been times like that where I'm like, oh, I need that. And but now that we're on Serato, it's so much easier to just like, yo, I need this.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise you'd have had to go find a crate.
Yeah, I was telling someone about Serato and just, like, the good and the bad, and weighing them, I think it's the bad outweighs the good.
Really?
Honestly. Yeah, like, I would rather go back to lugging my records and dealing with all the inconveniences of being a vinyl DJ than have everyone in the world be able to decide to be a DJ just like that.
Okay.
Every actor, every promoter, every bartender, every one's mama is a DJ now, you know, and I would rather just, because when you were on Wax, your record collection mattered, what you played, the depth of your records, like if you had some rare, like, it just marginalized everything. And I'm sure photographers and videographers feel the same way about Instagram. And so, I mean, I love it, you know what I mean? But at the same time, you know, it's always, it's a good conversation or debate on like the good versus the bad of all these technologies and how they've changed the industries, you know?
So has it changed your DJing? Obviously, like, you know, you said kind of being open to different formats, different genres, I think, you know, but beyond that, has the fact that everyone in the world can be a DJ, has that changed how you approach it?
Yeah, I mean, it's made me, there's a lot of really dope DJs out there now. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people, there's just so much music out here now that like, I can get hip to a new DJ and hear a whole set from them and they're playing all this dope stuff that I've never even heard.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, but I'm like, I want that music. I want that, you know? So if anything.
Who's come up recently like that?
Well, I just went to the Red Bull 3-Style.
Yeah.
In Krakow, actually. I was out there kind of networking, and I was trying to build like a network of DJs from different countries, Europe, if I want to go out there. And there's just such dope, like DJ Puffy won it last year.
Uh-huh.
He was really dope. This girl, Nina Las Vegas, was a judge, and she played a really eclectic set that she didn't stick to one genre. It was changing. It was just so impressive. And yeah, like I didn't know one song she played, but it was all funky and just unique.
Hey, if you're enjoying this one, let's go back in the Rebel Radio archives on iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Check out my interview with JCO, one of Steve's collaborators and partners, also a great DJ. He was a battle DJ, and he talks about bringing that spirit of competition to everything else he does. It was a great episode from the early days on Rebel Radio. You can check that out after you finish up here with Steve Wonder.
I really admire two things about DJs. One is their technical skills. You know, like you could play the same songs you hear on the radio you're sick of, but if they're manipulated in a way, you're like, oh, that was dope.
Yeah.
Or someone like Nina Las Vegas who just played the set that I was like, I don't know any of that, and I loved it. You know what I mean? Like, how often do you go out and not hear a song that you know, but you still like had a great time?
Yeah,
you know? So
for sure.
It's something really unique. So yeah, I mean, things like that, and like, I'm like, oh, like, and what song was that? Like, it had this beat with that lyric.
Uh-huh.
And, you know what I mean? It's definitely keeping me on my toes now. And you know, now that it's so much more accessible to so many people, like, there are a lot of great DJs who are just, like, really artistic and doing their own style and vibe, you know?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, I'm not a DJ, but hearing you talk about the good and the bad of it, right, like, I would hope, and I'm gonna ask you if you're seeing it, but I would hope that the proliferation raises the bar and it ends up making the best DJs better.
Yeah, I think it does, for sure. That's kind of what that Red Bull competition is about.
Yeah.
It's like, it's, I mean, but there's guys on vinyl who are still killing it. But
sure.
It definitely, you know, it's always a catch-22. It'll raise that, but at the same time, like, so many gigs that should go to qualified DJs who have been putting in work that really care about the craft are not going to them because so-and-so has a connection and can play a set, you know, and they get the gig, you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know, I'm not trying to come off as, like, the salty old guy, but it's just, you know, you think about it, and it's the technology changes a lot. You know what I mean? And
yeah, but I think it's really like you said, there's good and bad,
mm-hmm.
and you know, what you hear on Twitter is like all the bad or all the good.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And reality is kind of somewhere in between, like you said, and some of it is how you adapt to it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think a lot. Like, I never got into DJing to make a career out of it. I just...
What was going to be your career?
I didn't really have one. I went to school for broadcasting.
Okay.
I got my degree in broadcasting. I was working for this commercial production company called Anonymous Content. Mm-hmm. And that was a really cool job, and they were growing. A lot of directors I worked with, like helping them edit their reels.
And yeah.
I could have stayed with that, but what happened was I kind of... that Tantra gig when I was DJing at the Indian restaurant, you know, I was making whatever, a couple hundred a night. And I started to hear about this guy, DJ AM. Mm-hmm. And like, it was almost like this mythical figure, like, DJ AM, like, this guy does all the hottest parties,
right.
Makes 20,000 a night. He just did blah, 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 his birthday party.
Yeah.
And then you go on his website and he had all these brands and he was scratching and his like, yep. Woo-ha, like, and his the AOL sounds like, oh man, this guy's like dope, and he has like his marketing together. You know, like I was not even thinking on that level, you know? And so that being said, like, it kind of like, I had known Spider, and that was kind of, I don't know if he told the story, but that was kind of like our thing, is like, we wanted to like connect with AM somehow, just because it was like, this guy, you know what I mean? You heard, like, you didn't hear about any other DJs in kind of like the word about him and stuff. We ended up doing Magic Trade Show in 2005.
Okay.
Packed his forerunner up with records, turntables, everything. And we ended up spinning at the Bongo Jeans, like, little booth. And at the same time, AM was dating Nicole Richie, mm-hmm. and she was a bongo spokesman.
Oh, okay.
Spokesperson. So they told us Nicole's gonna come do a meet and greet, and AM's gonna come. He might wanna drop a set. We're like, dope. You know what I mean? Like, this is right when Serato came out. So, yeah. And that's what happened. He came and he was playing a set. We have video of it. We posted it on YouTube, and he was doing his thing, and he had Serato. I don't even know if we were on Serato yet, but he was like, yo, I just got every Ultimate Beats and Breaks vinyl ever from Jazzy Jeff. Like, and we're like, what? Like, just the concept of digitizing music was crazy to us. You know? So like, that was blowing our mind.
Yeah.
So, and then, he spun, and we were just like flabbergasted by his skill and just what he was doing. And we went to LAX, had just opened, and kind of met his friend Kevin Scott, and just kind of started to build a relationship, you know, and it just kind of grew from there. And then, like I was going to say, so we got kind of caught in the wave of AM. AM was able to kind of like break through the industry and create a new plateau of relevance and importance for the DJ. So as he went, you know, like, so did the industry. So he kind of got money up for everyone, you know. And I ended up getting on Dexstar, which was dope, you know what I mean, which was like amazing. But yeah, I was working that job, and one of my first gigs was like at a casino in like Kansas City, like random, so random, you know. But that gig for that one night paid like what I made in a month at that company. And I was I think I did both for like, I don't know, a month, and I'm just like, all right, I gotta start to pursue this full time. And that's just kind of led me to just being a professional DJ, you know?
Yeah. That's dope.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like, you gotta see, you know, these things inspire us, right? You gotta see that things are possible before you can even start to think about that.
Yeah.
And,
he was like, what? You can do that?
Right.
You know, and I know there's people like that in every industry.
For sure.
You know what I mean? There's always the one guy who just like separates himself from the pack, but also allows everyone. So yeah, I mean, that I was lucky enough.
Is there somebody doing that now?
For DJing?
Uh-huh.
No, because it all changed. When AM passed, it changed, because a lot of things, you know, Vegas turned really housey.
Right.
All the big EDM guys became, and the open format guys who would play hip hop, rock, kind of like where we all fell into, kind of got pushed to the back. Which is funny, because like in 2007, when I was DJing, I was a resident at this club Jet at the Mirage. Mm-hmm. And I would be there on Mondays and Fridays in the main room, kind of doing that, like hip hop, rock, oldies, yeah. a little of everything. And they would have a back room. And my man Eddie McDonald was the resident. He would book the DJs, and he would book like Tiesto.
Right, in the back room.
In the back room, yeah, and yeah. Layback Luke yeah. and Cascade DJing for like, it's so crazy. And then it just switched.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think it's kind of going back. I mean,
seems like it.
I don't want to say it's open format. I mean, hip hop is kind of dominating main rooms now, you yeah. know, but I think there's still an audience that wants to hear a lot of everything. You yeah. know what I mean? So, yeah. but yeah.
And then how about, I know you do some producing mm-hmm. with Spider, with JCO, right? Mm-hmm. JCO's been on the show.
Oh, tight.
Is that like a side thing? Is it how do they fit together?
I mean, it started as just kind of remixing, yeah. which I still do. They fit together because now producers get booked to DJ.
Right.
You know,
it's kind of like, what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. It's like they're not DJs first, they're producers who are getting asked to come play their music, which never was the case. You
right.
know, it was never like DJ Premier or Large Professor or like come spin a set of your beats, you
right.
know what I mean?
And they yeah. were
like of your songs, you know, like maybe it was, I don't think it really was.
So. Well, like yes and no.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you still had to, so, you know, when I was working with Scion, we would book Premier and mm-hmm. Pete Rock and, you know, Ali Shaheed Muhammad, all these guys, but they had to be, they were good DJs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they had to like, and it, so it wasn't like, yeah, come play all your Pete Rock and CL Smooth records.
Yeah.
But definitely when he would drop one, well, he wouldn't because he was mad at CL. Like, they had beef. But yeah. like when Preem would drop like a Gangstar track,
yeah.
everyone would go wild.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a set of Gangstar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was playing everything.
Yeah.
And so I think like there was that, definitely as a promoter, there was that, like, he's going to draw more because of who he is as a producer.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But at the same time, like, if they didn't, like, I don't want to, like, some of those guys were not great DJs.
Yeah.
Those three I mentioned were all great.
Yeah.
When they wanted to be that night.
Yeah. But these are events you're talking about, too, not yeah. like clubs.
Not like nightclubs.
Like, stuff. This is our club.
Right.
These are our guys.
You're right. Like, no, you're right about that for sure. I'm just saying, like, they still had to show and prove as DJs.
Yeah.
Whereas Calvin Harris, like, no one's really paying attention to whether or not he's DJing
yeah.
and what the set
it's
is.
It's still
like.
The same thing. They want to hear him play his song, his
right.
big record. It's like, it's
exactly.
Like, it's like.
I mean, I think that's just like, the way I look at it is like DJ has just taken on multiple meanings and
yeah.
and people on the other side of the curtain don't really know the difference.
Yeah. You're almost better off being a producer
right.
who makes a name for himself and gets a lot of hype and some maybe a hit record or
right.
some placements on some big albums and then getting bookings. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Because you're going to be working with
exactly.
some type, you know, there's not too many DJ booking agencies or
right.
management companies. I mean, there's, you know, like the CAAs of the world, they have DJs on their
right,
roster,
right, right.
but like.
But it's like Scam and
yeah,
Star.
But if you're connected, if you land a song on a Kendrick track,
yeah.
you know, like this industry is very much about affiliations.
For sure.
And who you're connected with. Like, I don't know if he does, but I'm sure like a DJ Dahi, who's got some amazing records on some big
mm-hmm.
albums, you know, like, his asking price, or he can like book a tour a lot easier, a DJ tour kind of off of, I mean, he is DJ Dahi, you know, but
yeah,
a
yeah,
producer
yeah.
kind of in his lane, you know what I mean, who's working with Kendrick and
right.
all these dope artists, like, that's almost more like than just like the open format guy who can rip it up, but is just like the DJ's DJ.
So basically, I mean? If you're saying, be a producer, but put DJ at the front of your name.
No, well, that's, I mean, just, I think he probably was a DJ
right,
before
right,
the
right.
beats were popping off, but I just think do them, if you like making beats, do them coincide, you know, coincide.
I want to talk about the New Wave mix.
Uh-huh.
Is like, It's my favorite mix.
Oh, dope.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I love it. And I love, I mean, you know, that's all music I grew up to.
Yeah.
But the way you flipped it.
Yeah.
And so talk about, like, I noticed in the description you said, like, this is not a normal mix.
Yeah.
So, like, talk about that.
Well, shout out to Mr. Best, who I did the mix with. I just saw it more as, like, we really, like, curated it. We, like, were real particular on what fit and what didn't,
yeah.
You know? And I think on mixes, you can just, like, anyone could do a DJ mix and put a bunch of songs together. But we were really keen on everything fit the vibe of that we wanted the sound to kind of just have one... Yeah. You know, it's hard for 60 minutes that everything fits.
Yeah.
And that's sure. That's what I always got in DJing is keep the vibe going. Don't do something that people are like, oh, like switched it up. You know
right.
what I mean? And
right.
so especially like if people are in the car, in their house, just listening, they just
yeah.
want to like
yeah.
vibe out. And kind of that's the idea was just kind of 80 songs that have been remixed, but like really remixed, not like a re-edit
uh-huh.
or different drums on it, but just like someone who took a song, played all their music over the acapella, and just kind of made it, I don't want to say better, but unique and good in its own right, you
yeah.
know, and it was just a continuous mix of that. And
so I know, you know, you collab with Mr. Best, with Spider, mm-hmm. with JCO, mm-hmm. like is there, why does that work for you? What makes you a good collaborator or what makes that good for you?
Someone to bounce ideas off of, yeah. really. You know, like, when I was just in Poland, I was just telling someone about traveling, and, like, I was in Germany for two weeks, like, a few years ago, mm-hmm. and I loved Berlin. It was an amazing city, like, so many museums, and there yeah. was just something about being by myself that the whole time I just wish I had a friend,
yeah, yeah.
someone to share the yeah. experience with. And that's how I feel on projects, you know? It's just, like, you can bounce ideas off each other. Oh, this works, that works. You know, just input and, you know, like, I'll be the first one to admit, I can do stuff technically working in Ableton, but I'm also limited in some points. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a collaborator can step in and, oh, this is how we do that, or this needs to be done. And it's just...
Have you tried collaborating with people and then you're just like, this is not going to fit?
Not really.
Okay.
Because... I have to know that I get along with them. You
first.
Know what I mean? Because even if I get along with them, we're going to disagree
yeah.
within that. So I got to know, like, whatever heat that we get into, like, we'll be past it and we'll still be friends after.
Sure.
I feel like it could be, like, collaborating. I mean, I've worked with my brother.
Are you good at keeping those separate?
In the past. And
oh, that's going to be hard.
I can't get into it any more than with my brother. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
that's the ultimate, like, butting heads.
Is he still making music?
Yeah, we're working on some new stuff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's funny. We did a song about, he's a wrestling fanatic. And
okay.
He did a song about Andre the Giant.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, this is like, you know, over a decade ago. And
yeah.
Bill Simmons is coming out with a documentary on HBO about Andre. And
oh, really?
I'm really keen on at least getting him to hear it.
Yeah.
Because it's really good. I mean, the song is great. And he's talking about Andre, like his life and all this shit. Like, it's so random. My brother would love to just make songs about like left field stuff. Like
uh-huh.
he made a song called Fuck the Parking Enforcement where he's just talking about kind of, you know, going off on parking
that's
enforcement.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it's just like he never, that's one thing, like it's like don't take yourself too seriously in the music. I mean, it is serious, but it's also like, you know, it's fun. And
yeah.
It's just, but yeah, I mean, I want to collab with more people, you know. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, I got to get to a lightning round before they throw us out of here.
Okay.
Are you still doing the podcast?
We are on and off.
Okay.
You know, it's hard. It's hard to get three people.
Yeah.
Spider and Best, always traveling.
For sure.
I'm on the road. So we love it because we get new music and... It's good to have an outlet for, you know, all these new songs are in your Serato,
yeah.
but you're like, I can't play that at a party. I can't play that here, but it works for the show.
Right.
You know, so we all have all this music and we're like, yo, let's meet up, do this show, but it's really a timing thing, and we want to. It's really cool when we like do a show, like we did a show in like August, and then I'm like watching HBO in December, and one of the songs we put on the podcast is like one of their promo, like the background. I'm like, all right, see, like we're on top of like kind of like what is not trendy, but what could be popular. Like we always talk about like wanting to do music coordinator work and stuff.
Okay, nice. And
I know that's a whole thing in itself, but.
So is that like, when you start this podcast, is there like, is there a goal? Or is it just like, yo, this will be fun, let's do it?
I think it's more just get music out we like, you know? The best feedback is from DJs, is, oh, I love the podcast. I mean, if we can, you know, I mean, I feel like commercial radio, the stuff you hear is so redundant and played over and over again that, you know, there's a million outlets now, obviously, where you can get your music. So we're just trying to provide another one that we feel kind of fits our vibe. You know what I mean? Like, if we're playing cool, eclectic stuff, like, you know, if event people hear it and they're like, we want that stuff at our event, great. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of like, this is not your ordinary podcast. We're kind of just playing other stuff, so. But I'm sure we'll work on more. It's just like the reality. We went hard in the beginning because when you launch the pod, they'll put it up if you get a lot of listens.
Right,
kind of, you know, obviously, it's hard to keep it. But we have guest mix and ask DJs to do guest mix for us and stuff. So if we're just like figure out a good schedule and stick to it, it'll be steady. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's dope. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to the lightning round.
All right.
So tell me one decision that changed your life forever.
Decision that changed my life forever. I guess to be a DJ. I mean, it's all I've known pretty much my professional career, you know? It's kind of scary thinking about life after DJing, but the older I get, obviously I got to think about it because it's kind of all I know, you know?
Yeah.
So it's definitely a love for the music. You just get so caught up in the music that you just put blinders on everything else, especially when producing or just working on stuff. But
are there moments where you question that decision?
I don't question decision, but I question like doing something else in the meantime, like the second side hustle that could have grown in while doing this, you know?
Sure.
So, but being a DJ is probably, but like I said, it's all was just the passion of loving other music, and, you know, hearing DJ Premier scratch on a song. I was like, that's what I want to be. You know?
If
he knew how many DJs he influenced.
Oh,
You know what I mean? It's just changed the course of so many people's lives for the better, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Complete this sentence for yourself. I don't have talent, I have blank.
I don't have talent, I have passion. You know, like I said, the passion, the love of the art and the music is kind of what drives, you know. I'm not the biggest hustler, networker guy, you know, but a lot of my success has come from the work I've put in with my remixes that other DJs play. You know, it's helped me get my name out when I travel to Krakow and I meet DJs and like, oh, I play your stuff, you know. There's no better feeling than knowing, like, I've been able to influence someone I've never met, you know.
Yeah,
it's like,
absolutely.
That's all you can hope for, is that the work you do can impact someone else and they can appreciate it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I worked for you, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
If you work for me, it's a tough one. Never thought of myself in a boss position.
Well, like, you know, manager, publicist, booking agent, you know, even if we're collaborating on music.
I guess just get it done, maybe. Okay. You know, just like, yeah. I know it's kind of generic, but
no, yeah, it's, yeah.
Just like the end goal. I mean, a lot of my struggles is actually finishing beats I work on, mm-hmm. but I know the most important thing is just finish what you're working on and move to the next thing. Don't get caught up thinking about what you need to change and this and that. It's like the people that excel and get further are the people that keep it moving. So yeah, kind of a keep it moving mentality.
No, that's interesting you say that, because some people, you know, they say that some people like to start things, some people like to finish things.
I'm good at starting.
Both are important.
I'm really, like, whenever I start a new remix or something, like, kind of prematurely, I send it to a friend. Like, what do you think of this? You know, but also kind of sending it to them to, like, get feedback.
Right.
Direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's like you can really hold yourself back worrying about... You're not going to please everyone with the art you put out.
Right.
So, I mean, if you just constantly put out trash, it's going to be obviously, because no one is going to mess with it. You're not going to get any good feedback, you know, but it doesn't hurt to just, you know, like, my thing is just, I do a lot of different stuff. I'll put out a trap song, and then I'll put out a Mary J. Blige R&B remix, you know what I mean? Like, I like so many different things that I don't have, like I was saying earlier, I don't have one thing that I go hard on.
Yeah.
Just kind of dabble in a little mix of everything, you know, so.
Yeah. What's your favorite city to travel to?
Favorite city? I loved Berlin, and I loved Tel Aviv. It was incredible.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Tel Aviv blew my mind.
Really?
Yeah, it was like just being out there in the Middle East, and it's like a mix of L.A., Miami has the beach,
yeah,
New York because it has nightlife, the food. I mean, then you go over to Jerusalem, and that just blows your mind. Being in the old city, you're just like,
Yeah, I bet.
This isn't a movie set. You know what I mean? This isn't Universal Studios. This is like real. This is it, you know? So, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I got to go.
Yeah.
What, is there a book that's had a big impact on you?
I listen to audiobooks a lot.
Yeah. So what?
And I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah, you mentioned when we connected over email. What are some big podcasts for you?
I love Jalen and Jacoby, just on some like sports hip hop stuff, you know what I mean? I love the Combat Jack Show, RIP. I mean, he was the originator, you know what I mean? Like, I remember before they had the theme song, I used to listen to that show early.
Uh-huh.
They did a contest and they would play beats every week.
Like, oh, really?
Should this be our theme song? And the one that was the main one was it, but yeah, I mean, I always found solace in like driving or just like listening to just good, thoughtful conversation, you know, it's what I want, you know, it's just like, I'm glad that podcasts are a thing because it just gives you such another level of like whatever you're going to find on the news or...
Well, it's funny because I'm the same, I'm an audiobook guy, I always have an audiobook going, but sometimes I need to take a break and hear like the conversation, like real people talking, whatever. So then I go to the podcast.
I have so many, honestly.
Yeah.
I listen to Pods of America.
They just got an HBO show.
Yep.
Crazy.
I was on them early. My boys, DJ Crooked and DJ Neva in Vegas have a new podcast. It's about being a DJ.
Oh, that's
and I
cool.
love hearing DJs talk.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about, like, how did this record work?
Yeah.
How long of a shelf life did it have? And it's just like, just listen to any DJs who, I really respect those guys. And, you know, they've been in the game and crushing it forever. So just like, they know what's up. And it's just like relatable. You're like, like, that's how I felt about that song or DJing in that club.
Sure.
Or playing for that type of crowd. So.
What's the podcast called?
It's called Road, Reflections of a DJ. Yeah, it's new, yeah.
I heard Captains of Industry.
Oh, yeah. They just had Shecky, Jonathan Schechter on.
Nice.
And that was a really good, that guy's got gems for days.
For sure.
Yeah, even just listening to him shoot the shit, I'm just like, this is great. Honestly, I listen to more podcasts than music, honestly. Uh-huh. I don't know if that's good for me. People, I was like, you check out the new Migos album? Like, nah, I've just been listening to podcasts. Like, I just need to stay in tune with what's happening and all the different spectrums, you know.
It's easy to get overloaded with music too, so yeah. Sometimes you need a break.
Yeah. I think SoundCloud is my SoundCloud and Mixcloud are my two like music services for choice. Like,
yeah.
Because you can just find all types of stuff. And
definitely.
It's just like, it's really popping there.
What movie do you think you've seen the most in your life?
Movie? Damn. I want to say Clueless, but that's embarrassing. No.
Clueless was a thing for a minute, you know.
You know, a movie I love is Apocalypto.
Oh, really?
I'm not supposed to be a Mel Gibson fan. Obviously, I'm Jewish, but something about that film. There's just those films you could watch over and over again.
So I got Mel Gibson, Alicia Silverstone.
Yeah.
Stacey Dash.
Yeah. Movies. I mean, I love a good movie.
But it's funny. Certain movies, I ask that question because, like, certain movies catch us.
Yeah.
That are not, like, on paper.
Yeah.
Not what we would choose, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you see it, whatever, and, yeah. You know, it catches you.
I mean,
in the
of course, Scarface, like, all yeah, the.
Of course.
I don't know. I'd have to think about that, but.
No, those are good ones, man, yeah, for sure. We just watched the Stupid Feudal Gesture. It's a Netflix. Biography of the guys that started National Lampoon.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so then they talk about writing Animal House and then Caddyshack.
Yeah.
And
how was it?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
That's great. And then I watched Caddyshack with my son. Who's
oh,
eight.
Yeah. I watched Caddyshack on the plane out to Europe.
Dude, it's such a great movie.
Yeah.
But that's one that's like, it's not really a great movie, but it's a great movie. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
I watched Three Billboards.
Oh, is it good?
It's wacky.
Is it?
I liked it, actually. My cousin, like, he hated it. Like, uh-huh. Some people hated it because it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
But, I mean, great cast.
I think we need movies like that. I haven't seen it yet, but we need movies that, like, make you hate it or love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I love Get Out, too.
There's a great YouTube of... Jordan.
Did the Oscars happen yet?
No. It's,
okay. I'm like, what time is it?
A few weeks.
Okay, yeah. I was like.
But there's a great YouTube I just saw this weekend of Jordan reading fan theories.
Oh, yeah.
About Get Out.
I think I saw that.
It's so dope.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, you actually.
Yeah, one of them is like, yeah, I didn't realize it, but you're right.
Yeah.
You know, I forget what that was.
Like it's like paying homage to other
yeah,
films
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
stuff. Like,
exactly.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's your favorite DJ of all time?
AM. Yeah.
How about Living?
Living. That's tough. I guess I'd say I have DJ Premier.
Yeah. You see the play.
I love my man DJ Mighty Mai in Vegas. I will always go out there. He plays one of the biggest clubs at the Wynn. And he just... always keeps it new and is just like been in the game for so long. And
I mean, he's a still, dude that like
still hungry for new songs, and we're always trading music. And I'm just like, I just admire the passion, the skill, like the love for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you just meet these people
for sure
that share it. And Spider, Best, you know, all my homies. Yeah. Like, I just try to associate with cats that I aspire to be like and that I really admire.
I mean, Mighty Mai's a dude, like, talk about the journey.
Oh,
from
yeah.
Where he came from.
Crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
That, you
I think
know.
He was at the Fresh Fest. Him and Shecky were there too.
You oh,
know?
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
That might have been in Philly, though. Philly
yeah, yeah, I'm sure yeah. It was Philly. I was in Oakland.
Okay, definitely.
But, you know, like, he was making those backpack records.
Oh, yeah, heavy.
That, like,
heavy in the
there's
game.
No way you would see the guy he is now.
No.
And have thought
and
that.
And he might not have even saw that.
No, I'm
know?
Sure.
Like, but,
yeah. Yeah. I'm going to hit him up to be on the show next time I'm out there. That's
you know, it's
idea.
Just like, talking about the NBA All-Star Weekend is like, I was telling someone, like, I never thought I'd see the Lakers in last place. I never thought I'd see the Warriors, the champions. And even going to that Adidas event, I was like, I never thought I'd see the day where Adidas might be more popular than Nike.
Right.
But all these things can happen. Yeah. Like, if you could tell yourself, like, you can't see it, that means it might actually happen. You know
I
what
mean,
I mean? It's more likely to happen in that
for
sense.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
for sure. And as a Warriors fan who grew up never thinking you'd see the Warriors towards the end of the season, you know.
Yeah.
But who thought a guy at 6'3"
changed the league?
Right?
Yeah.
Like that's you'd call that impossible.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing. That's a great point that like those things that you never think are possible.
Yeah. Just like if you tell yourself that, right when you tell yourself that, you might wanna then say, actually, it might be possible.
Like, yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? Like anytime I hate on like a new record or something, like I'll tell somebody like, oh, that's just crap. And then I end up liking it like a few months later. You know what I mean? Like if I hate on it at first, that means I'm actually gonna like this eventually. You know what
I mean? Well, I learned that like, you know, when I was starting my career, I kind of, it wasn't like my goal, but I kind of had this thought of like being an A&R guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that my taste is my taste. And like there's a few things I've passed on that have gone on to be, you know, household names and game changers.
Oh, damn.
That I just didn't see it. And
while you were A&Ring?
I was managing.
Yeah.
But like I've told this story, but
you could have made a move on it early.
So I had a shot at meeting Eminem talk to him about management. That doesn't mean he would have picked me or whatever.
Shecky was working with him.
Yeah. So like, but at the time, I was like, oh, this kid's dope, but no one's gonna buy a white rapper.
Yeah.
Right.
I saw Eminem.
It had nothing to do with his skill.
Yeah.
But it had to do with like I just didn't see it.
Yeah.
Right? I just didn't see it happening commercially.
Yeah. You told yourself that.
Yeah, yeah. I told myself, white rapper, that's not going to happen. I like it, but, you know, it's
so
just going
to
be a few of us.
If you had the ability to catch yourself saying that, you could have then,
Well,
scratch that. I'm going to
pursue there's a couple others, too, and I can't remember, but he's definitely the biggest.
I saw Em at the Fillmore for the Lyricist Lounge tour when I was in college. I went to SF State.
So, okay.
And that was an early Em.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He was just probably like, just another guy, and I was like, yo, he was dope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, so there's a few of those. So I was like, you know, so that taught me, like, you just have your own, you know, I just got my own thing, and it's not.
Absolutely.
You know, but when you tell yourself it's not going to happen, that's a great lesson.
Yeah.
Man, thanks for doing this. It's
absolutely,
been fun
talking
to you.
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
How's everybody find you online?
I have a website up, but it's kind of just a flash page for all my other stuff. But
what's your
Steve Wonder.
Is there a channel where you're most active?
My SoundCloud,
which
I think is DJ Steve Wonder. I mean, if you look up Steve 1DER, that's how it's spelled. Like in Google, all my stuff will come up. SoundCloud, Insta. I'm on Insta a lot, addicted like everyone else.
Yeah.
Twitter here and there.
I mean, definitely everybody check tell me the name of the mix. The
New Wave mix. Yeah, and that's on Mixcloud.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
Thanks, man.
Banging it all weekend.
Yeah, dope.
Love it.
Dope.
Come back anytime, man. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Yo, that was Steve Wonder on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Make sure you hit us everywhere. Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Send me a postcard. Do whatever you feel. And most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio.